For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What is up, Wizards fans? Welcome into another draft-focused episode, essentially, of the Believe in Wizards podcast. I'm Matt Moderno. I've got Ersin Demir joining me here today of the eDemir NBA Substack. Does an amazing job. Please go subscribe to this thing. It has helped me immensely get ready for this draft process because he's doing extensive breakdowns of the kind of guys in the draft I like the most, you know, the guys that aren't like the no-brainer top five picks or whatever. So, Ersin, great job so far, man, and thanks for coming back on.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on again. I had a lot of fun with our last show. Can't wait for this one, man.
It's gotten a lot of great feedback, too. I think everybody loves the work that you put in, and it really comes through on the episode. So great job so far, and let's keep it rolling. Today, we're going to do guards. Before we get going, as always, we're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas. Every flavor you can think of at this point, they're all delicious, and the old school seltzers are great from Stateside as well. So really, this time of year, you can't go wrong with that. It's hotter than shit in the DC area, so they're perfectly refreshing. Also brought to you by Bet Online. It's your number one source for all your summer sports this season. MLB, golf, anything you can think of, WNBA if you want to do that. All the latest stats, news, and scores available for your favorite teams. Get the latest odds, lines, matchup reports, player props, odds, just about everything you can think of for every sport out there. Head to the website or use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Also just want to plug our live draft show that'll be during the first round on June 26th. So that's Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Check us out. And as always, kind of do the fundraiser aspect of it as well here. If there's something that anybody listening to this would like plugged on that live draft show, it'll be our biggest show of the year. It'll get the most downloads. So it's the most eyes and ears on whatever it is you would like to promote. And all you need to do in order to receive that promotion time slot is make a donation to the MS Society. Wizards broadcaster Dave Johnson has been, you know, big advocate of theirs as a foundation. He also deals with MS, so he's a great member of the Wizards community. And we'd really just like to do something nice for another good organization. So, you know, if you want to make a contribution to that, anybody, let us know. And then hit me up and say, hey, I made this contribution. I'd like to plug X, Y, and Z. Could be your business, your band, whatever. We'll happily incorporate that in there and get you going. So yeah, MS Society, the link to donate is in the show here, in the show description. So click that. Make sure you use our specific link so that you get, you know, the credit for doing that and making the donation. And yeah, it should be a fun opportunity to raise some money for a good cause and hopefully an exciting night for Wizards fans overall. Like I said, today we're going to talk about guards that should go in sort of that first round range. And there are a lot of them. So I think that's actually a sneaky, you know, deep position in this draft. So let's start with maybe the highest guard on this rookie scale consensus mock draft. And that's Reed Sheppard out of Kentucky. Probably the like kind of forgotten guy of their freshman recruiting class coming in. He was a legacy. He's to had Jeff Shepherd play there as well. And, you know, he wasn't a top 15, like no-brainer, one-and-done guy. And then here we are. He shot the shit out of the ball this year. He tested great at the combine athletically. I think that surprised some people. You know, there's some stereotypes out there of like, oh, the white shooter or whatever. But the dude moves really well. He's a capable athlete. I have some questions personally about his just role in the NBA. I think he'll be a solid player no matter what. But the number three pick kind of thing is a little bit of a stretch for me personally. And maybe I just have to kind of get over that in this year's particular draft. So Harrison, start us off here. Where are you with Kentucky's Reed Shepherd?
Well, we're on the same page with him, because if I look at Reed Shepherd, I'm not going to take away his production. I think he's one of the best shooters in the class. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of feel for the game, he's one of the best guards in this class as well. Sure. And you said it, man. He didn't get the hype outside of the other guys at Kentucky, and he played himself to the hype. So he does a lot of credit for that. But to me, I think a top five, even top 10, is too rich, because what I struggle with is, what is his role? He's not a point guard. And one of the reasons that he played so well is because he was set up by other guys. For example, with Edwards, with Dillingham, the reason that Reed Shepherd just had to shoot and had to make defensive plays, etc., his role was simplified because the other guys were taking care of the rest. So I think that's a bit of something that's being underrated. Sure. And if I look at his NBA role, I'm not really sure what he's going to be. He's not a point guard, so he can't play the one. And he's undersized to be a two. So you need to put size next to him. You need to put, I think, scoring next to him and playmaking next to him. So he's more of a player you should, you know, have someone to build around it to make it happen. And not that every undersized player has to go in the same way, but if Reed Shepherd should have, for example, if he had playmaking skills, I think he was the de facto number one pick in this class with everything else that he brings. Because that's, I think, crucial to have as a guard going so high. It's either that or your offensive creativity has to be very good. Well, in this case, to me, it's not, because it's more so about the shot. You're buying the shot. And I think his shot is being overrated in a way that he's being seen as a complete shooter. But I barely saw him, you know, make a play with his hand and go for a live dribble three, for example. Or off the move, etc. It was more of the same. He was elite at it, so I'm not going to take that away. But you're going for a utility guard to me with a top five pick.
Right.
And if you agree this class is bad, that's still too much to me, man. So I have him outside of my top 10 just for these reasons. And yeah, I can't really see why he's number three unless a team... You know, things we can develop into a guard, or we can develop these must-have skills in the next few years, then I understand it. But to me, that's a bit too much.
The combine measurements are always interesting to me. You'd obviously rather a guy test really well, but it's one of those things when people are surprised by how well you test, it means you didn't actually use that as functional athleticism, you know, on the actual basketball court. And I think that's kind of where I was at with Reed. Like, I didn't think he was a bad athlete or anything like that, but I also didn't think he was like this top tier athlete that maybe some of the combine measurements or you know, the combine testing is leading people to believe. So if you don't really show it, does it really matter if you can do it in an empty gym against cones? You know, not really sure. Again, I'm in the same boat. I think he'll be a very solid player. I think he'll have a very solid career. Right before this episode, I tweeted out, hey, I think Jared McCain from Duke is going to have like a really solid 10 plus year career. But I don't really know what super separates those two guys. They're both not really point guards. They're probably around the same height. They both shoot the shit out of it. I actually think like maybe McCain is maybe a little bit better of a facilitator. That might be a hot take. I know some people I really respect that do draft stuff that are like, you know, Reed Shepherd, he might be the best passer in this draft. I personally just didn't see that. To me, the gap there isn't particularly big enough to justify, like I said, that top three pick. To me, that would be a rough pick and not a guy I would want to see if I were a Wizards fan, you know, with that number two pick potentially. Like that'd be one of the few picks that really kind of bother me. Even if he is a point guard, he's still smaller for some of these other point guards in the draft here too. And I would want more positional size and sort of switchability across multiple positions. So you don't offer much defensive versatility. Let's say he has to guard ones, even if he is like this knockdown shooter, it just, it caps your ceiling a little too much for me to justify him. So I think we're on the same page there. The next guy on the consensus board here is another freshman, UConn, Steph Castle. Much higher on Castle personally because of that size and positional versatility. I think he'll like instantly come in and be an impact defender, which is very rare for a freshman. And I buy him as like an MF-er that comes out there. I've mentioned this on the show before, but seeing him in the first round in person, like guys were afraid to bring the ball up the court when he picked them up. And there were other really good guards on UConn. Like Cam Spencer is an underrated defender. Tristan Newton was a good defender. But guys were much, Muhammad Diar is even still a pretty good, you know, defender with quick hands. And guys were much more willing to go at any of the three of them than Castle. And I think that says a lot when people are like, nope, don't even want to try to dribble past this guy. He's got the size and the strength to guard multiple positions, you know, probably solid guy one through three. And I buy enough of the playmaking, and I think the shooting will come around because I've seen some decent touch other places on the court. So to me, I would definitely have him above Reed Sheppard personally. Where are you with Stephon Castle?
I totally agree, man, because I have him at number three. Okay. I think what separates for me to have him in the top three is he can do everything, just as you said. I think you're buying the defensive impact with him. You're buying his defensive impact while he doesn't have the ball in his hands. I think that's a big value.
Sure.
There's one thing with him that he's been put as a box as a point guard due to the size. I don't think that's his role. I don't think he should be a point guard. I think he should be a secondary creator somewhere in his career, but I don't think that's really his game. I think his game is be the ultimate connective piece on a court. So you have to have your scoring wing or guard at place. But the difference within these types of players are the hardest to find, you know, because most impact players, they need the ball in their hands in some degree. And with him, it's all the way around. So I think him starting the year with the injury, playing himself to being a key player on UConn, a key player, you know, with this impact. I didn't really think about it. It was about him. It was about the other guys, right? It was Spencer and Newton in the backcourt. Yep. And Klingon was playing in the same role also as a utility player type. You know, but because he did it at UConn doesn't mean he's going to do the same thing in the NBA.
Right.
I think what he's going to do in the NBA differently is going to be used more so as interior piece. I think with this size, especially if he's going to fill his frame further in a couple of years, I think you can use him as, you know, what you see often nowadays is that, for example, off-ball screens with him in the post as a play finisher. A combination of how... I can't really get his name, really bad. But he's the Kentucky guard who went to OKC this year. Wallace.
Oh, Kasam Wallace, yeah.
Yeah, he's playing in the same way for the OKC. You know, they make it happen. With his shooting, he can have the limited ball, they still make it happen. I think with Stephon Castle, is the shot will it ever develop? To me, I think it's a bit overblown because with him, to me, it was more so lack of confidence throughout the year. And the mechanics, yeah, they don't really look good, but that's okay because, for example, Tyrese Haliburton had horrible mechanics and he's shooting 40% every season from three. So I think it's being a bit overblown that your mechanics have to be perfect. So I think that Alabama game in the tournament, that changed it all for me because they targeted him in the beginning of the game. That was Alabama's strategy.
Yeah, they left him wide open and torched him.
Yeah, and he just nails them. One, two. He was like, okay, I'm going to punish you this way. And he did it at the biggest stage. So if he does it against, for example, a conference opponent, impressive, but less impressive. But in this way, he was like, he was countering moves the other team was having to beat UConn. So I think that for me was huge, especially as a freshman. That gave me the edge to put him in the top three because I think he has everything else. The jumper is, yeah, that's the ultimate swing skill between... Maybe all-star potential. I think in him, you see all-star potential, but further down the line. And just to be the best connective piece in this class, man, I think that's the value of the number three pick here. Because again, I think what I value is some players, if they need the ball in his hands, they need to be very good at something. And with him, it's just you can scale down his role as much as you want, and you're still getting impact. So I think that's the... That's the first thing the team is looking for to build a winning team. So that's why I have so high.
I think the distinction between didn't score and can't score needs to be made with a guy like this. I've heard a lot of people say, how does he score in the NBA? As a freshman guard, he scored 36 points in their two Final Four games. It seems pretty good to me, you know, on a team that didn't need him to score. Like, you look at both Reed and Rob Dillingham, they were too busy losing to Oakland. So I'm all for all their scoring. Like, you know, how much really good did to do that?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I think in the biggest moment, he scored when he needed to do that. So again, just because he didn't score a ton, I don't think it means he couldn't have scored more. And guys do it different ways. So the comp I've been making there is like a Drew Holiday kind of ceiling. You don't want him to be like the only playmaking option on your team, but can he make plays for people? Can he lock, you know, the team's other best perimeter player down? Yeah, for sure. Can he score enough? Like, I don't know, Drew's like a 16-point-per-game career scorer. Maybe Castle never even, if he's only a 14-per-game kind of guy, but he's an elite defender, he moves the ball. Okay, great. I think I'm not saying he couldn't score more than that, but you know what I mean? Like, if, even if he's in that range, I still think he becomes a really valuable piece for a long time. So I think we're definitely on the same page there. Let's pivot to the next freshman guard on the list here. We're going back to Kentucky with Rob Dillingham. He's number 9 right now on this rookie scale consensus mock. We've seen some, hey, you know, this guy may fall on draft night kind of thing, because they're, after a certain point, there really isn't kind of a great fit for him necessarily. So I'll let you go first on Dillingham this time. So what do you make of his game, and kind of where do you have him in your general board range here?
Man, I'm surprised. Why is he even falling on draft night? So that's surprising to me. I think if people use the measurements argument, he didn't get smaller by any means in magically. So his arms are the same way. The size, you know, is going to be this. But I think with him is, I have him at 7, so close to the 9, or at 6, one of those two. But to me, I think he is the best ball handler in this class by far. He's the best player in terms of offensive creativity by far in this class. Those are the two separators. And to me, he has to be number 1 if you want to make it happen. Actually, if the Washington Wizards decide to go with him, I would love that for the Wizards, because, you know, this is my guy for the next 10 years. Not just to put a question mark behind it, but you're sure, well, this is the guy that I'm rolling it for the next 10 years, because, you know, I have to put the ball in his hands. I have to build around him to make it work. And I think if you look at him, it's just 20 points. Doesn't really matter how. The trade comparisons are due to the size. I don't like that comparison for him, because I think with Rob Dillingham, you know, you're buying the live dribble playmaking as a pick-and-roll playmaker, or as a self-creator in isolation. Besides with the scoring, I think his touch around the rim is very good, man. I think he's just effortless. I see a Kyrie level of handles with him, but he just needs to, you know, mature his game a little bit more so he can, you know, scale his role down. I think at Kentucky, at a certain point in the season, that was the case, because Ree Shepard was, you know, ascending. Justin Edwards was doing a lot better. So he had other pieces that they used. But on the downside, the defensive end, you know, you're going to lose it, the battle with him there. So he's going to be targeted by defenses. But I think it's not because of his effort. I think he plays hard. I think he plays harder than the numbers show in terms of how much defensive rating you're giving up. I think he does well navigating screens, but he's not strong enough to make the outcome work. For example, if he dodges the screen or he fighting to the screen, you know he's not going to win the battle, especially against NBA centers. So that's something that's a given, and you have to accept that. But this guy makes you instantly better in terms of offensive rating. So it's more of the classic. I think the undersized is being overused as well, because if I look at Darius Garland, played in the playoffs, 6'2", 6'1". Damian Lillard is an all-time great, an Hall of Famer. He's what, 6'1", 6'2"? John Morant has a max contract. Trae Young has a max contract. They're both, you know, players who have playoff minutes, all of them. I think Damian Lillard, if he wasn't for the Warriors, he should have a ring as well. So how many of these undersized guard can play are in the league are all-stars right now? So to me, it's a bit overblown, because I think he's going to be the first all-star in this class. Because, of course, production is important. And with the team knowing I have to put the ball in his hands to make it work is a context that will, you know, earn him a lot of money, because he's going to be a number one option. And if the Washington, for example, go with him at two, I would understand it because you have your star and you have your building pieces around him, man. If you have Avdija, he's not ever going to be a number one option to me, and that's okay. But he's very good at this role. And I think he's well regarded playing in the league with a lot of value, especially with his contract. I think he's even a descending contract.
Yep.
You know, you have Koulibaly with the same defensive upside, more as a total player, as that modern scoring wing. I think he has the most potential to add that scoring game to his arsenal, whereas Avdija can be scaled down to specifically one role. For example, not as the same player, but as Harrison Barnes, for example. And if you put a guy like Dillingham onto a team like that, with a good center in the middle, that he can use to utilize his pick-and-roll playmaking, his live dribble passing, I think he can be one of the best players in this class, easily on the offensive end. And the defensive end, it's all up to him, man. Because maybe he bulks up 15 pounds, he gets a bit stronger, and he shows some effort, especially as a pick-and-roll defender. That's a win, man. And even if he doesn't, Trae Young went to the Eastern Conference Finals. He's still their number one option. And he has been an all-NBA player, so I don't really see the issue with him, why he's falling on draft night. I think he's with top five talent easily. But to me, the defensive liabilities are something that you have to take into consideration. That's why I have him a bit lower than five. But that's the take for me with Dillingham, man.
Yeah, that's great and incredibly comprehensive. I don't have a whole lot to add to it. I think you're higher on him than I am just because this is a personal philosophy. I just wouldn't want a guard that small because it just really kind of boxes you in a certain way. Like you have to play a certain style if he's there, same way with a drop coverage big on kind of the other end of the spectrum. So it wouldn't be my preferred choice with the Wizards at two if they ended up with another lottery pick and they're picking at nine or something and he's there. Cool. I think he could be what Wizards fans maybe hoped Jordan Poole would be coming in, but it's just for me, I don't want to see another small guard who was just going to get picked on defensively anymore. And he has to be so good offensively to make that case. The guys you mentioned are all unbelievably elite offensive players. And he's just a little bit shy of that. It probably, you know, limits him to like a sixth man scorer type role. And to me, that would be tough at two. Now, if I can get that guy at nine or 10, you know, all good. Like, let's just lock in this guy that immediately raises the floor of our offense. And I do think those kind of guys are valuable in a playoff setting of just come in, microwave for us, get us some points. It's just, I think you see it like it. There's a certain limit on what your team can do if your key guys that are playing 35 minutes for you in this higher usage role don't defend at all. So that's not where I would want to go at two, but I do kind of see the full offensive value there. And he's going to make some team happen. And I actually like that take about, you know, he could be the first all-star from this class because I think you're right because he's going to immediately come in and have, you know, average 18 points a game or something crazy on a bad team. And he'll get the notoriety and the highlights to kind of justify it from a narrative perspective. All right. Next guy we have Nikola Topic. I say it differently every time I say it, and I've heard it differently across multiple games. So I'm actually sure which one it is. But where are you at with Nikola?
I have him a bit lower. I have him at 16 outside of the lottery.
Okay.
And to me, it's if I look at his playmaking, I think he's, after Dillingham, he's the best live dribble passer in this class.
Agreed.
I think he's very good at creating scoring angles, despite being a limited athlete. Mm. It's all about craft with him. It's more of a typical European guard, actually. But with him, the plus value is he has the size. He has the natural feel for the game as a playmaker and a scorer. Mm. I think his touch around the rim is incredible for his age. I think it's only going to get better. And if he can show he can get to the rack and the NBA level as well, he's going to be a consistent scorer. I think what I see in him is a guy that can potentially score 80-90 in a game and average 6-7 assists and be a starter for a team. But that's if everything clicks, man. Because if I look at his athleticism, it's very underwhelming. I think it's, in terms of defenders, the guys that we've spoken about, I think he's one of the worst of them, and not to talk down on him, but the another important nuance that why make me lower on him is his career is very well planned out because the owner of the team Megabasket is one of the most powerful agents in Europe, Mirko Raznatovic, and he owns the club. And Megabasket has a lot of NBA prospects drafted. Right. Yep. And he played the year there, and they loaned him out. So right. Red Star loaned him out to his team, and he went back. He went back at the moment that all the momentum was gained. And after that, it shouldn't really matter what happens. Of course, it's very unfortunate that he went to an injury that is going to be used against him. Maybe that the medicals that in Europe, they didn't see what the American doctor saw. So it's a bit of it's kind of fishy.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's just I have to contextualize the numbers and add this, because there's nothing wrong with being prepared for the NBA and being a marketing product that's being sold, right? Because we saw the same with Wembanyama. But the difference was Wembanyama is going to be de facto number one player. If he plays 5 minutes or 30, it doesn't really matter. But with Topic, he had to play on a team that, for example, I don't want to call it, it doesn't really matter if they win a championship or something. At the end of the day, it's a team and they're competitive. But that's the reason that he has so many NBA guys and he's so powerful is that he has a team that he can instruct the way he wants. So Topic was the highly regarded prize by American scouts. He's been in the radar for years. And then he suddenly stretches the service. Now he even went to number one considerations. Of course, man, you have to take the Shaedon Sharpe way. Just buy the hype. How far will it bring me? But I think the hype is real in that regard, but it's less than it's being put by consensus, man. Because this, to me, is the most important context to add. And I think with him is the game was easier to win because of the non-existent NBA 3-second rule. So he has a comfort zone. Actually, it should be harder, but for him it was easier, if that makes sense, because he knows how to play. I think in terms of feel for the game, they're not very few that better than him at that age, even if you compare the last few classes. So that's something that's a strength that will keep him in that lottery consideration. Yep. But with him, man, the defensive end, you're going to know it's not going to be good. And you have seen multiple European guards struggle on that end because they're overwhelmed by American athleticism. And at ABA League, it's just very limited sample size in terms of players that he had to face in the NBA that he faced there. I think when he played for Red Star in a very reduced role because he has the Milos Teodosic in front of him, he had other guys in front of him. So it's not realistic that he was the number one guy. That was never going to be his role. So I think that's why I value the number of the games that he played there much less, because he played in a different way and the NBA team won't use him. So to make a long story short, I think you're buying craft with him. You're buying one of the best passes in the class with him. Who knows who's going to be an efficient scorer in the NBA? Well, the defensive end is going to be underwhelming because of the lack of athleticism. And do you see a starting point guard in there? In the future, I do. But I think the lack of athleticism, the defense versus are too much for me to put a lottery grade on him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have any outlier skills to me outside of, you know, the scoring, the live dribble passing, which are two very important things. But I think the difference is, why do I have Rob in the top 10 and why do I have him outside of the lottery? Because I think with Rob, you know what you're getting without any doubt. And to me, the context around Megabasket, there's too much to go with the flow with him, go with consensus. That's why it made me lower on it.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Even if the medicals fully check out and the two non-contact knee injuries are a fluky thing and you can discount that, okay. I just think, one, there's something real there. You don't have that level of production in good leagues at that age without being a pretty good player. It's just there's more risk there than I think people would maybe like to admit. This is a guy that his best value is on ball. And what does he give you if he can't be a full-time on-ball player in the NBA? Like, I don't buy that he provides much value as an off-ball guy. So to me, he's a guy who needs a ball in his hands. If he's not, like, oh, somebody said Luka the other day. Like, okay, well, one, he's smaller. He's not as strong. He's not as physical. He's not as capable from a scoring perspective. The passing is certainly special, but if people sag off of you, it's a little tougher to make some of those kind of same passes. So he has to be able to score a certain amount to justify those on-ball reps. And I just don't think there are a ton of teams that they can give that for him and then also mask the defense. Whereas at least Dillingham, the floor to me is, all right, like I said, if you've got to put him as an off-ball microwave scorer, like that's still a valuable thing. If you're Topic and you're not an on-ball creator, there really just isn't a role for you other than just like, okay, maybe you're like a backup facilitator, point guard type. I'm not saying he's Josh Giddey because they're both taller, non-shooting creator types, but similarly, like when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, what does he do for you? You end up with him like in the dunker spot or in the corner, and they're not really going to make enough shots, I don't think, to justify that. So if you have to really buy the shooting long-term, and I don't know, honestly, I think if you have enough touch on the court as like a passer and things like that, it probably translates. So I do think he'll be a decent enough shooter, but there's a risk there. If he doesn't shoot it, it becomes sort of a less athletic Tomas Satoransky type guy with better passing. And that's like a valuable enough bench player, but that kind of caps the ceiling. So I think risk adjusting him in this like late lottery range, it makes a lot of sense. All right. Let's keep it rolling here. We'll get through these next guys probably a little quicker. The next one we have is Providence guard Devin Carter. He's an older player that didn't really shoot it for much of his career. And all of a sudden, these moon ball jump shots started going in a lot more this year. He rebounds the shit of it. He's tough defensively. He's probably one of the better perimeter defenders in this class, I would say. Got good length, good strength. Got the NBA pedigree as dad Anthony Carter. Played a long time in the league, not being a great athlete, just a smart, cerebral kind of player. So I think Devin Carter gives you that. And he's also just got like that little enough MFR to him that I think it kind of helps out. And I want a guard like that. You know, he probably is another guy that, like, if he doesn't shoot it, it limits him a little bit. But worst case scenario, could he be a Derek White type defender? You know, maybe not exclusively number one playmaking option, but playmake enough for you. Like, I think he's a really valuable NBA player no matter what. But I don't know that the ceiling is crazy high with him, for instance.
Well, if I look at Devin Carter, I see a lot of toughness because I know toughness is very valued in the NBA. Sure. I think he... Again, this is a class full of connecting pieces, man, and he's the next one in line. I think the three-point shot at his volume was the outlier for him to be a lottery pick, yep. And that he nailed them because the context is Bryce Hopkins went down and it was his team. So that's something
and he had to score it all of a sudden. But
yeah, and he made it happen. I think that's why he's getting all the credit for it. He made it happen, and it was really an outlier level to me. In terms of the jump that he made, in terms of volume and percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's one of the top 15 rebounders in the whole NCAA. It's crazy, man. Even for his position or the total, I'm not really sure. But it's just, if I look at that numbers, I will take them at face value. And I was like, okay, This is a guy who is, if we just as that interview with Joe Mazzola, for example, you know, winning on the margins. I think he's that ultimate player that you need to win on the margins with his rebounding, with his extra possessions that he's going to bring a team's offensive rating up. Even if his interior scoring doesn't really translate, then he's going to be solely used as a shooter and as a connective piece and as a, you know, as a multi-positional defender. That's enough for me to pick him in the lottery, man, because he has experience. Normally, I'm not really that high on going for upperclassmen unless they have really outlier skills. And to me, the outlier skill here is his three-point shot. He really proved it to me that he can make that happen. His toughness, I think he can be one and two guards very easily. Three is a bit tougher, but although he has a very strong upper body and he has the frame to do it, and the NBA is an all different level, right? Then in terms of how he did it in college basketball.
Yeah. So some that's guys maybe he can guard there. Yeah,
exactly. I think I see the same impact defensively as Davion Mitchell, for example. Okay. I think that I like that comparison for him, but he doesn't have, you know, the playmaking Davion had, and he shouldn't use that in the NBA so much. And we spoke about the undersized guard earlier. I think he's one of those guys that you, the Cavaliers, for example, they make it happen with Spider and Garland. I think he's going to go to a team with undersized guard who is scoring heavy, put him next to him, man, to make it work. Okay. I think that's the type of role. I think he can grow into more on-ball reps. But in the beginning of the career, he shouldn't have too much of these. I think he's an ultimate utility player with some more upside as a shooter and as a defender. So to me, that's the value. I have him at 10. So I think that's reasonable value to me if I look at who's picking around that number. Also, you see, you said he has an FU attitude that you need to have that to succeed, to be respected as a leader. So I think a lot of intangibles with him as well.
Next guy is kind of a nice juxtaposition here a little bit, I think, in they're just very different about how they're going about ending up as fringe lottery picks, and that's Duke's Jared McCain. We mentioned him earlier. Freshman guard. Didn't see a ton of him from the playmaking perspective or the defensive end. I think he was kind of like solid enough at those things, not anything special. But I think he really, really shoots it, and he's another guy that I kind of gained more respect for seeing him in person. And he just had like an avalanche of threes and basically buried James Madison in the second round, like single-handedly. He found ways to continually to get open despite them having really good defensive players, like keying on him and trying to like double him, take him off ball and things like that. And he just found ways to get open. He made deep threes. I buy the shooting like instantly day one. To me, if he has like a Seth Curry level career of just like a knockdown shooter, who's probably not an on-ball creator for you, so he's an undersized, you know, shooter type, I think that's a no-brainer. He can do it for a long time, like Bryn Forbes on steroids kind of guy, of just this play or this you know, sharp shooting one, probably doesn't give you a lot of positional versatility or whatever. So I think that caps the upside here, but I, you know, there's probably more playmaking there than we got to see at Duke. That kind of wasn't really the role they had for him. And there were other guys that Jeremy Roach didn't bring a lot of value if he wasn't the guy with the ball in his hands creating for people. Tyrese Proctor, same kind of boat for him. So McCain kind of got forced off ball maybe a little bit more than, you know, he even needs to. We just haven't seen enough there to say he can't play make. So I think there's at least some theoretical upside there too. But this is a dude that got hated on a little bit because he like paints his fingernails and did weird TikTok dances that people made fun of. But you've got to be really confident and like comfortable in your own skin to do that kind of stuff. And this is a guy that all the college basketball reporters and coaches and things like that say, like the off-court character stuff is amazing and he'll blow you away talking to him, how smart he is. But on court, he has like that I'm going to bury you approach to it, and he does it mostly on, you know, from a shooting perspective, but it's still valuable. So I think he's going to be a guy that we look back on a redraft in 10 years and like, shit, he definitely outperformed whatever, you know, level he ends up. If he goes 17, I think he'll end up, you know, much better than something like that. How do you feel about Jared McCain?
I was with him. I was up and down with him the whole year, man. I was like, I've seen him as 2025 guy. I didn't think until February, I didn't change my opinion. Same. But then around the conference tournament, I think he really changed his role. Yeah. And what stood to me is the tournament game against NC State. I think that was the outlier to me that, okay, this is just real. he's also it's of course the hype of the moment. But what was the differentiator to me is he took his role as the leader when no one else did. Kyle Filipowski was again underwhelming in the big moments, mm-hmm. you know, with his easy foul picking up and then negative body language, and someone had to pick it up. And Duke's experienced guards, they didn't do it. So he was the one who was picking up his team and tried to make the best out of it. I think he is effortless shooting stroke, you know, in terms of the shot. Actually, of course, I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but I don't really care about that because I will always stick to my own thoughts and not let consensus, you know, influence that. But if I look at this shot pure mechanically, I think it's better than Reed Shepard's. I think he is...
I don't disagree with you, by the way. I think they're both really good shooters, but I actually think McCain projects better as a shooter longer term as well. So I'm with you.
I agree. I think in terms of volume, you can scale him up as much as you want. I think if you take away the tournament games, there's a lot of consistency on there. But what's making me have him outside of the lottery is what else does he do? I think in terms of a passer, he's good. He's adequate. I don't see plus value there. And that's something that he has to have if you consider the size and his position. So in between there. But in terms of what else does he do on the court? That's where I struggle, man, because the team context matters as well. I think Duke was built in a different way than Kentucky, that Jared McCain was asked to do more than he should have done. I think that was a natural outcome. I think what's giving me confidence that he's going to stick in the league for a long time, just as I said, I think he took his role as a leader very seriously when no one else did. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't the number one option on the team by any means. It was Filipowski and Proctor. Those were the guys. And those guys were underwhelming. And no one else picked up that team when it mattered. And in that NC State game, I'm happy that they lost the game, not because I don't like Duke, but it helped McCain to put his value as a leader on the floor. I think he was the only one who tried to do something back. And not to have your whole take on one game, but the reason that it was in the middle is, or the shot is pure, I buy that, but what else does he do? And that what else does he do was which being asset what is influence in the tournament. So I think if a team around the 20s picks him, they're going to get a very adequate role player who's not going to be projected to be as number one or two option to me. Mm. That's not really his game. I think his game is to be that, you know, that floor raiser for the whole team, because you know the shots, but you can scale it up as much as we want. But outside of that, as a self-creating scorer, I think it should be a bit less in terms of what he has to do. So that caps the value of to me in a bit. But if I look purely at the shots, I mean, I don't see why Reed Shepard is being more highly regarded than him. I think hype is a big thing, despite him going to Duke, which is crazy that he doesn't get the hype, but he's at Duke.
It's the combine measurement testing stuff, honestly. Like, that's the one differentiator. And like I said, it doesn't move me that much if I don't see him use those things.
Me neither, man. He's the same player, right? He didn't grow or shrink a few inches.
Right, McCain's not as good an athlete, but he also had 6 double-digit rebounding games this year. He had 5 double-doubles, and, you know, like, that was rebounds, not passing. So, and I think he could pass more on a team that called for him to do it. But, so, you know, a 6'2"-ish guard, the rebounding may not translate or anything, but it says that he's not afraid to mix it up. And
you can't teach effort.
Yeah, and you're also, you've got to be enough of an athlete to do that as a guard at his size. So this, like, oh, he's unathletic thing, I don't think that's totally fair. He's, you know, 5 rebounds a game for the season and 2 assists, not ideal, but for the assist category. But again, it's about role and context. And you mentioned that NC State game, went for 32 points on 5 of 11 from 3, but 2 games before that, against a plucky James Madison team that just came off an upset against Wisconsin, like, he buried them, and the game was over before
the first half. It was over right before the season started for them. It was crazy.
He went 8 of 11 from 3. They were all deep, and it just, like, literally punched a good team in the mouth, and they had, like, an NBA-level defender in Terrence Edwards, and he had no answer for McCain, and I think that's...
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
That says a lot about him too. All right, we got two more guys here I want to hit before we get out of here. We'll do these both guys kind of quick. Let's do next USC freshman guard Isaiah Collier. What are your thoughts on Collier?
I think he's been misunderstood, actually.
Okay.
Because what's underwhelming to me is that everyone talks about Bronny James, and he was very smart to go to the same team as him because it takes away the hype of the number one guy in this class in terms of high school rankings. But I think he played nonchalantly, if that makes sense. A lot of turnovers, a lot of bad turnovers. If he has turnovers that he's trying to execute the high-level read, I have no issues with that. I would so continue doing that. But it was very nonchalantly turnovers. I think he was out there to play for his stock, not to play for his team, if that makes any sense. I think his, what you're buying with him is the physical tools. I think he's built as a linebacker, but he has the NBA-level athleticism and functional athleticism to make it happen as a scorer. I think he's being underrated as a playmaker because at USC he didn't really perform that good on that end. And I think in high school he wasn't really asked to defend either, so... That's not a knock on him, but I think with him is the level of effort. He can be much better than he was showing. And at the beginning of the year, it was very good. So you saw, damn, this guy can be a top five pick. It's already the hype of the high school rankings. And then it went down. USC was not a good team. Of course, they had a lot of talent, but they were not a good team. I think in terms of floor spacing in college basketball, that's a very bad combination. And if you don't have the good shooters, you're going to struggle. So I think that's why they missed out on the tournament in a good Pac-12. And they didn't have a lot of, you know, maturity. They had Kobe Johnson, but if I were a college defender, I would let him shoot all day. Take away the inside value. And Collier had to compensate a lot for that. So they didn't have really a de facto shooter, for example. They didn't really have that. So to me, that take away a bit of the context. What do I have him? I have him just after the lottery. I think he's one of those guys, if the Miami Heat get in on him, they will make it happen. I think that's a good fit for him as well, to do how they're built. As if Kyle Lowry is getting older, and you need a guy who can be a defensive stop before everything else. I think that's the NBA value that he's going to offer, to be a very adequate defender, and then the rest will come more of the other way around. Because I will buy the offense. I think the offense is a matter of mindset with it. But I have too many issues of how well is he without the ball in his hands. That's something that I struggled with throughout the whole season. because based on this, if he was good off the ball, I would have him in the top 10. But that's where I don't have him. You know, that was not convincing to me.
I think from a physicality standpoint, like I think he could hold up defensively well enough, better than some of these guys. Even if we didn't really see it this year, I think that frame will allow him to do that, you know, even though he's not like the tallest guy, but he plays kind of bigger than he is. He's got that like running back bowling ball kind of vibe to him. And I think that'll translate on the other end. I think you nailed it. I think him around shooters, I would have gone a lot, you know, better. And they just kind of didn't have the right team makeup for him. He and Boogie Ellis seem to have like this weird my turn, your turn kind of dynamic. And I think that hurt him. But worst case to me, he's like a really solid backup point guard that can kind of come in and you know, put some pressure on people. But to me, he's an automatic paint touch. Like, I think he'll be a really hard guy, even for good NBA defenders, to keep out of the lane. And can he create enough, you know, collapse defense and kick out to people? So I think, to your point, if he has the right team and shooters around him and stuff, I think he's a really valuable guy. And I like him more than several of these guys we've already talked about here in terms of, like, best case outcome for him. I think he's a little bit more boom or bust. But I think the boom is a guy that could be, like, you know, an all-star level point guard. And to me, that's, if I'm picking it like 9 or something like that, I would at least consider it if I strongly needed a guard. That's probably like the range, I think, where he starts to make sense for me. And if he fell a little bit, like, so be it. But he's definitely interesting. And the next guy here, kind of similar in a sense, kind of had a little bit of an up and down year. And that's Carlton Bub Carrington, local guy here for Wizards fans. You know, he's from Maryland, played at Pittsburgh this year. Was really good in the non-conference, started out early, got some attention with a triple-double early in the year, and then had like a really rough like couple weeks in January, rebounded for a bit, then had a really rough like tail end of February. So I don't think he's as like home run pick people all seem to point him to be. Like, he's really grown because people have like latched on to this highlight real stuff, and the good looks really good. I do think the complete picture, though, you have to be fair and say, like, he did really struggle against some meh guys for big portions of the season. I would offset that by saying he was a guy who's a late bloomer. He kind of grew into a size here a little bit. So I think for him, there's even more upside than the traditional freshman, too. Like, I think that he produced the way he did already is surprising. And I think if he's a guy that went back to college, we'd be talking about him like in the top 5 to 7 next year, as opposed to, you know, 15-ish kind of range this year. Just a solidly built, you know, like good framed guy. I think he'll be able to guard at least 2 positions in the NBA, I would say, just kind of the way he's built and his length. So to me, he's a riser. And, you know, I think that's not surprising that we've seen him kind of get some traction here. But I do think maybe the hype machine has gotten a little out of control with a lot of people like, oh, I'd take him 8 now. Well, you know, there's a reason that NBA teams are kind of risk adjusting for him a little bit, because he did look bad against some of their better teams as well, too.
Well, to be honest, if I look at Bob Carrington, I had him on my list to watch the whole year. Sure. And I was okay, next time I'm going to watch him, next time I'll watch him. And right now with the hype I have, to be honest, I've really seen very little of them, man. To have really take that I can get behind. So yep. That's actually the most fun players to deep dive. But with a few days left for the draft and everything that's said about him, I don't want to do that because it has no more value. Yeah. And I think the bad outcome is you don't want to be contrarian. So I have no take on him. But what I saw from him is I think it's more of the offensive scoring dynamics that get all the hype, you know. So I think in the last few games, you had, what, 20 points consecutive times?
Yeah, a game that they had. Went on the eaters, for sure.
That speaks to his maturity, and he's one of the youngest players in this class, so that always has value. But with him, I was like, maybe that's something that I don't get behind. So I think about Riley Kukul a lot. When I saw him the first time, I was like, okay, I see the same type of player Riley Kukul was at Florida. The difference is he stayed in school and his draft stock plummeted. Now he's going for the NIL money, of course, and that's his right to do so, and maybe he'll find a way to the NBA.
Sure.
But to be honest, yeah, man, if he's in this class, that's great. But I don't have him ranked on my board just for that reason, because I haven't watched him.
Yeah,
so right. I think in terms of the local kids, that's a good argument, man, because if I want a guard, it should be a local guy, right? But where he go, I have no idea, man. I've seen the same thing. Top 10. I was like, okay, man, if this guy is a top 10, then I'm crazy for not even having him watched him, you know? So but I was like, okay, if I take away some of the hype, what's he all about? So, but then maybe I have some few days left that I can get behind something, but yeah, that's not really realistic. I don't think I'm going to watch him at all. Just see what is going to happen.
I think for anybody listening to this, I don't want to be the takeaway that Matt said, oh, he's actually not that good. I think all I'm saying is the good is really good. And if you want to draft him solely because of that, that's fine. I just think it's somewhat disingenuous to pretend like he didn't have kind of a rough stretch. And I've seen this narrative now that like, oh, he carried this Pittsburgh offense kind of single-handedly. It's like, well, no, they had an almost 20 point per game scorer in Blake Hinson, and then a 4-year starting point guard in Ish Leggett is also another DC product here. You know, that spent 3 years at Rhode Island before going to Pittsburgh this year. And Leggett is really good. I mean, he multiple time, you know, 15 plus point per game kind of guy, especially down the stretch for them too. So as he got healthy and integrated back into the offense after a rough January of his own, I think that helped Bub a lot. So it's not, I don't think it's wholly representative to say like as a freshman, he came in and carried this whole team. It's not really what happened, but he's really good. The flashes of potential are enough to say, okay, like this is the prototype of things that translate to an NBA team. He's going to like ISO score and create for himself. I think he'll be tough in the pick and roll. Again, I like the size. So, hey, around the lottery, like I totally get it. But that isn't without some risk here. There is a, yes, you know, he's a late bloomer and he has room to grow. And that's the side I would lean on. It doesn't mean that there's also not, you know, maybe maybe there's some flukiness, you know, stuff here too. So that's all I'm saying is I think there's a reason why he's been kind of in that lottery range and not moved up higher. Some team could convince themselves that the good is so good it's worth taking at 7 or 8. I'm just not sure that I ultimately would do that. So I think he's going to end up in like the probably, you know, just right around the end of the lottery and beyond kind of range. So right now he's actually 19 on the consensus mock draft from rookie scale. I might be just a hair higher than that on him, but either way, this is a good guard group. And I think, you know, I like McCain. I think the chances of him having a really long career are high. So I think he's a probably safe pick because you just need spacing. But to me, these guys right after him in Collier and Carrington both have higher ceilings, but they're also lower floors. So I think it's just where you're drafting and what your team needs and how sort of risk averse you are or not, I think will dictate kind of where these guys ultimately go. Because to me, they're the same kind of range players. It's just for different reasons. So if I were the Wizards, though, and I have not another lottery pick, I'd aim for one of those two guys. Because you need to hit on stars, and I think they have more star potential than some of the guys right before them that we mentioned.
I love them. Would you take him at the end of the first round if he's there?
Would I take Carrington at the end of the first round if he's there? Oh, a no-brainer. I'd take him at, you know, if they end up at 20 or move up from 26 to 17 or 18, I'd definitely consider it then. You know, would I take him at 8 if I were the Spurs? No, I don't think that makes as much sense. But I think, you know, a team like Washington, you can afford that risk a little bit more because you just have to hit on somebody big at some point. So I think there's a chance that he turns into something really special long term. Same with Collier. Erson, most important question of the show here. Where can people find your work?
Well, you can find me at Edmir MBA on Twitter. That's EDMIRMBA. And I have the same EDMIRMBA.substack.com where I continue to write, I think, almost every day since the last month. So that's crazy. So my focus is the less coveted prospects. So if you are interested in the guys that you hear his name about the water cooler, I'm not really a guy, but I try to give, to shine some light on the guys that don't get a lot of credit. To me, that they do deserve. I think I'm spoiled in this year's class. And that's not me being contrarian, but there's a lot of role players that have gone to have NBA careers that don't really get a lot of attention. So that's why I write about them. So the newsletter is going very good. So I'm going to focus on growing that next year as well. And what I have coming up is after the draft, I'm going to do team specific things. So if you like that, where I go each of the teams where they projected with their draft pick and the team summary and expectations. So that's something coming up. And a mock draft, and outside of that, it's just me on Twitter, man, tweeting out basketball all day.
I mentioned in the beginning that the Substack is a must subscribe. I think for me, I watch a decent amount of basketball. If anyone listening to this probably has figured out at this point, but you send out names at this point in the year, and I'm still like, who? So the fact that you're still surprising me a week before the draft says a lot about how thorough you're being, and I really appreciate that.
Hey, thanks, man.
All right, everybody, you know the drill. Again, check the link to the MS Society fundraiser here in the episode description. Really appreciate anybody's contribution to that. And check us out on draft night. We'll be back here. Erson and I are going to talk forwards here in a follow-on episode. So stay tuned for that. As always, we're presented by betonline.ag, and we will catch you all next time. Because Wizards fans like to support Wizards fans, we've got a special treat for the listeners of the audio version of the podcast from Wizards fan Will Copps and his bandmate Brittany. Their band is called Wall of Trophies, which hopefully the Wizards will have plenty of here after this draft produces the next star Wizards player, fingers crossed. And they're going to play us out today with their song, Meadow. Again, that's Wall of Trophies from Wizards fan Will Copps, his song, Meadow.
And I saw you walking while you were sleeping in the meadow. I found you glowing in the trees there. So in the sound of God. Ooh. I wonder how you are passing time now, or is time something?
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.